50-50 right in your ballpark. I mean, at least the Miami Marlins were part of history. But what would Travis Hunter have to do in the NFL to match what Ohtani's doing? That's what we're tackling today, theoretically speaking, baby.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios.
The man your man could smell.
Theo Dorsey is theoretically speaking.
But are you a different animal and the same beast?
Streaming live on YouTube.
You're gonna break up with me because of what I do on the radio?
Here's Theo Dorsey.
Good heap. Especially the 15,000 plus that we're at Lone Depot Park last night. And those of you, I'm not sure how many were actually tapped in to the performance that was put on by Shohei Ohtani. Some are calling it one of the great individual performances of all time in baseball. Player like me, I don't know, doesn't really resonate. I don't know what to compare it to. But I do know this, C-Cat. The dude was just bombing balls out the park. He was stealing bases left and right. He was having his way. And in a game that ended 20-4 against the Marlins, the thing that shocked me the most was that, you know, the manager for the Marlins, Skip Schumacher, he was just like, he was just cool with it. He was like, yeah, we'll just keep throwing to him. I respect the dude. I did see at one point he looked at the camera and was like, I guess he didn't look at the camera. He looked at his guys. He was like, nah, like bump it. Screw it. Throw the ball over the plate. Let him knock it out. Let him bully us and bludgeon us. C-Cat on the other side of the glass on the ones and twos. Your baseball guy. Please explain to me what the hell just happened last night to the Miami Marlins and why they kept letting it happen.
This was supposed to be a down year for Shohei Ohtani because he's not the dual threat that he came to the league being, right? He had the elbow surgery, could not really be the dual threat on the mound and in the plate, so he decided to have probably top three offensive seasons of all time,
Shohei Ohtani. But here's the thing, though. Aaron Judge is having a better season than him right now.
Depending on what you value. I mean, he's having a couple of better numbers.
Yeah.
But when you consider all the context around it, like I said, with how it's supposed to be a more of a down year for Shohei Ohtani, he just messed around and did something that no one's ever been able to approach, let alone do.
He had the things that he did in that ballpark are likely illegal in many other states. 6-for-6 on the day, 2 doubles. 3 home runs. He had 10 RBI. He had double-digit RBI. You don't see that happen typically in Major League Baseball. You don't see that happen in baseball in general. In fact, even when I used to play MLB The Show, 10 RBI is getting a double-digit number in that stat department, pretty rare. I think only 15 other times in history of Major League Baseball somebody's done that. On top of that, he gets the first time ever in the history of the league, 3 home runs. And also multiple stolen bases because, when you hit the ball out of the park, you're not allowed to stand on the base to steal one in the first place.
Yeah, this is pretty incredible.
What the hell? And beyond how incredible it was, not just for Ohtani, who then enters the 50-50 club, he actually creates it. There's been nobody in the history of the league to ever hit 50 home runs in a single season, as well as steal 50 stolen bases. I will say this, the big homie Rob Parker, He does discredit a little bit the stolen bases because of the rule changes. In fact, he says it as the way he's been putting it all day long. Ohtani's been out there sliding in the pizza boxes. Is that how much bigger the bases are now in baseball?
The bases don't matter.
The base size doesn't matter at all.
The base size does not matter to the stolen base record.
No, what about the whole thing where they're limiting the pitchers?
That's the difference. That is the entire difference. Huh. It is not the base size, but it is the amount of times.
The base size has to matter.
I mean, very minuscule. It's more of a safety thing. It is unquestionably the amount of times someone can throw over to first base, throw over to second base. Because if you can only do it 2 times or the third time you're taking a big risk, that opens the door for so many stolen bases. That's the reason why stolen bases are up this year, not the difference in the size of bases.
So Ellie De La Cruz leads all of Major League Baseball with like 67 this season. Shohei Ohtani got up to 51 thanks to the Marlins. Again, I guess not reading the scouting report, not realizing he was just going to run and steal the base. He did it over and over. He did it twice last night to break the 50-50 seal. But when I watch something like that happen, and obviously in retrospect, because I ain't watching no damn regular season baseball, were you actually watching this thing live?
I was working. I was working on Russo and Rizzo when it was happening live.
Okay,
and then I was working on the post-show production of this show and Russo and Rizzo.
How aware of it were you at the time? Because this is also something that on a Thursday night football, and we will touch on the NFL, Aaron Rodgers did get a win against the Patriots. I'll address how specifically that game, the result of that game only would have mattered if the Patriots won. You can literally, I didn't learn much at all out of that game except for one bright point that we'll talk about later on in the show that matters to a totally different franchise. So, yeah, Thursday Night Football did happen last night. It was a snoozer. The Jets won. Did you, as it was going on, feel like it was something you needed to tune into? Was this like a must-see, everybody-tap-in thing at the time it was happening?
Because he made history before, so no. It's not like, I feel like if you missed the home run that got him into the 50-50 club,
yeah,
you kind of missed that part. So you got the notification about it, cool. Scroll up on your phone, that's good to know. So when he continued to have a 6-for-6 game, no, I don't think many people were watching that.
And I think, I mean, I hate that for, I mean, not for Ohtani, but just kind of for baseball in general. We were talking about how right now in Major League Baseball, you literally have the two biggest stars in the sport on the two most prestigious franchises, maybe at least when it comes to market size and brand, brand recognition with the Dodgers and the Yankees, Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. And it really doesn't feel like it's moving the needle that much. Now, on a football Friday, here on Theoretically Speaking, this has to be a first, and it might be the only time in the midst of football season that we're literally leading off with baseball. But still, I do want to pivot it over to the gridiron, because when I look at what Shohei Ohtani is doing for Major League Baseball, being a transcendent player, something we've never seen before, and also doing it at such a high level that you have the manager on the other side for the Marlins, literally like, yo, I respect, love the game too much and like what this guy is doing so much that I'll keep it in play and let him keep making history on me. What he's doing is unprecedented. Also, at the same time, we have a guy in college football in Travis Hunter who, entering the 2025 NFL draft, a lot of people have him mocked to go number one. He plays defensive back, also wide receiver for the Colorado Buffs and Coach Prime. And beyond that, as he's been doing this thing two ways since high school, I'm likely since the Pee Wee days, everybody's been lining up and saying that has to end when he gets to the NFL. Travis Hunter, you can't do that when you go to the National Football League, but it sounds like from everything out of his camp, out of Coach Prime, and even based on what we see him do right now in college football, like CCAT, he has no plans of specializing at all when it comes between playing cornerback or wide receiver. The dude want to do it all.
It's actually easier in a cardio sense. There's so many more stoppages in the game of college football and in any NFL than there are in high school sports.
That's true.
It's a little bit easier. You catch your breath. You get a lot more timeouts. You get the media timeouts. With how many commercials you're seeing nowadays in these broadcasts, it's getting easier to have a guy that can play both ways, and Hunter looks to be doing it.
Now, you know, the funny thing to me is I'm surprised that it hasn't been since, what, Babe Ruth, that somebody's been that good at pitching and also hitting. Because I do feel like if you possess those skills, both are very hard to do. I'm not trying to undermine what Ohtani's doing now or what Babe Ruth did back in the day. I don't have enough knowledge on those sports anyways to try and get that analytical about it. But baseball feels like, to me, the easiest sport to be a star in multiple roles, because you talk about stoppages. I mean, that whole game is a stoppage. The whole game of baseball, there's not a lot of cardio involved. That's why you see dudes like Pudge Rodriguez on the mound.
No, it's not an easier sport.
It's easier to play both ways. I'm talking about specifically like what you said, like fatigue-wise, cardiovascular.
Okay.
Like there's 162 games. That point was made to be before. The one danger that people feel for Travis Hunter, it's not about whether or not he can be an elite wide receiver and an elite corner in the NFL. There's the health risk, and then there's also the fatigue risk. Like, you are going to wear yourself down if you play 100 snaps in the National Football League like he's been doing in college football. In Major League Baseball, yeah, there's 162 games, but if Shohei Ohtani, who this year is not pitching, is both pitching in some games, he's starting in some, and also being a DH, I don't see how that hasn't happened since Babe Ruth. That's my only concern or question about
it. The skill sets in question in baseball is like if you took the greatest pilot of all time and then said, all right, now you're going to become the greatest violinist of all time. The skill sets in baseball between a pitcher and a hitter and the hand-eye coordination and the actions that they're actually doing is completely different.
Totally different ballgame.
In football, it's a whole lot closer.
Yeah.
What you're doing is a little bit different because you're moving backwards most of the time in the secondary. So football, I would say, it's when you're training for football, you're training for both most of the time. What I would say is, that side, that scheme with your offense and with your defense, that's where the problem is with Travis Hunter going forward, because that DC is going to want to have Travis Hunter 100% of the time,
yeah.
and the OC is going to want to have Travis Hunter 100% of the time mm-hmm. working with his quarterback. That's where the problem's going to arise.
I do wonder exactly how they're able to bear that out in the Colorado football practices. At this point, obviously he's levels above most of the competition he's going against. So I'm sure no matter how much of a level of preparation he has beforehand, as well as how skilled he needs to be in those exact route trees and whatnot he's doing on offense, and also the schemes on the other side for defense, like, he's better than everybody else in college football, so that's going to help. That's going to change at the National Football League level. I do think, though, what would it take? What would it take for us to feel the same way that we feel about Shohei Ohtani, who now at age 30 is en route to becoming the first player to ever be a MVP, right? An MVP strictly as a DH. He's not even doing the whole both ways thing right now. He's doing this just as a batter, as a DH, proving his worth to the Dodgers, who also, by the way, in the midst of all of that history he made, just, you know, casually clinched a playoff berth. Clinched one. Little team accolade to go along with the individual stuff. What would it take for Travis Hunter on the football field at the National Football League level to make us feel the same way that we feel about Shohei Ohtani, which means, again, he's a one of one. He's a guy that is worth that mega $700 million deal, no matter how much of it y'all say is funny money. 888-760-3776. 888-760-3776. What would it take from Travis Hunter at the NFL level if a team does take him number one overall and he does say, I'm playing DB, I'm also playing wide receiver? What would he have to do at the next level to match what we just saw and are continuously able to see out of the superstar that is Shohei Ohtani in the Major League Baseball League? 888-760-3776. 888-760-3776. That's the number to tap into, theoretically speaking. Hit us up on the Baptist Health Hotline. Come on. You know the number to call. 888-760-3776. Are you experiencing the foot and ankle pain and need to see an expert in the field? Baptist Health Orthopedic Care has a team of foot and ankle orthopedic surgeons and specialists who are regarded leaders in their specialty. Visit baptisthealth.net/ortho to learn more today. Baptist Health Orthopedic Care combines its resources of experienced physicians and leading-edge treatments and technology to provide advanced orthopedic foot and ankle, joint replacement, spine and sports medicine care. Visit baptisthealth.net/ortho for more information today. Baptist Health Orthopedic Care has offices conveniently located in Palm Beach County through the Florida Keys. Learn more by visiting baptisthealth.net/ortho. Shohei Ohtani making history on the diamond at Lone Depot Park right here in South Florida yesterday against those Miami Marlins, who were more than willing to roll out the red carpet and say, hey, buddy, show world. Have a day. Now, I will say, too, I kind of feel like the Dodgers were not only anticipating being able to do this thing at home, like, they almost would have expected it and maybe would have preferred doing it back in L.A. because the Dodgers are back playing in L.A. today, and nobody expected him to get over the threshold of both the stolen bases and the home runs.
No, those ticket prices were so high.
Yeah.
They had to have been so high. People were anticipating that next homestand when Shohei was going to actually do it. The fan who caught the 50th home run, he didn't give it back to the organization. Took it home with him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I would have, too. It depends on how much. What was the organization offering him is the question.
I don't know.
Things never get public enough for me. Because if I'm a fan, especially in 2024, and I saw somebody mention that, hey, it didn't get authenticated. Yeah, sure. Okay, it didn't get authenticated. It's 2024. That we have high-definition videos that are showing literally this fan catching that ball. So if you're the Dodgers organization, like, you got to offer me the world. You got to offer me the world. Like, I need something with some commas in it to give that ball up, especially if we're going to elevate it up to be this thing that is so unheralded, so heavy and hard to reach. Because the numbers that he did do were literally that. In that same game, in that same ballpark, not only does Ohtani get 50-50, he becomes the all-time single-season home run leader for the historic Dodgers franchise. Like, it's not like the dude, there's a lot of people that are lining up to discredit what Ohtani did last night. It's a freaking regular season baseball game against the non-playoff team in the middle of September. And we're talking about it. I mean, it's kind of electric. It's kind of dope. I really like it, and I do think that there's an opportunity for Travis Hunter to be able to do this on the next level in the NFL. I just wonder if it will be worth it for him in the long run. Because, dude, like, imagine getting paid, again, rookie scale salary in the National Football League, and now you're filling out two pivotal positions for an NFL franchise, a starting corner and a starting wide receiver. I've been saying this all offseason leading into this year. Wide receiver is the number two most important, most valued position in the National Football League right now. Cornerback's got to be top five. Yep. If you get Travis Hunter with a top five pick and you have him under your control for 4 years and he's playing starting corner and starting receiver for you, you're I mean, like, come on, like, what are we doing? That team is getting a more unfair advantage than even a rookie-scale quarterback.
We kind of saw a very Nerf version of this theory with Deebo Samuel, where he said, I want to get paid like a top 10 running back and a top 10 receiver because that's what I'm providing
combined
for the 49ers.
Yeah.
He got a pretty good deal. I don't think he got what he first asked for.
No. Nowhere close.
And now if you're talking about two different sides of the football, it seems like every mistake that Travis Hunter will make on either side of the football, it will, which everyone makes mistakes on the football field, so it's not anything special that Travis Hunter will commit, but every time he does something like that, it'll call to question, say, well, why are we having him on that side of the field when he could be spending more time on the other side?
And right now, Travis Hunter is continuing to prove his worth. Look at what he's doing. He literally was just named the defensive player of the week in the Big 12. Because he got an I mean, it's the Big 12, I know. I mean, don't do that. But he got an interception in that game, plus a couple of touchdowns as a receiver. Travis Hunter, through three games, second in the nation in receptions with 30 receptions. That's 10 a game. Yeah. He's averaging 10 receptions a game at receiver. He has 5 receiving touchdowns. He's the reigning Big 12 defensive player of the week. And he's a guy that, I mean, the interception he had against Colorado State, C-Cat, He ran that route. He ran that deep end for the receiver, and he ran it better than him, and then ended up with the ball. Like, I don't know why quarterbacks would even throw it to him the rest of the year.
So you asked the question, what would Travis Hunter have to do in the NFL to be known as the Shohei Ohtani of the NFL?
Yeah.
That's the question that you're asking
to
the listeners, whether it's on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook, or on the airwaves at ESPN 106.3. If for some reason, and this isn't going to happen, but if the Chiefs were bad and he got drafted to your favorite team, the Kansas City Chiefs, what would you expect out of Travis Hunter to get him to be known as the Shohei Ohtani?
I think if he, again, and it's a lot different because as I've been kind of like weighing this out, right? Shohei Ohtani, what he does on a typical year when he's not nursing back from, the Tommy John, Shohei Ohtani would pitch and also be an elite hitter. So he'd be the elite starting pitcher and elite hitter. And the only thing to compare in the NFL to a pitcher would be the starting quarterback. And there's no world in which we have a starting NFL quarterback who's also playing safety.
True.
Like, there's no world in which he's doing anything other than playing quarterback because that position is too valuable and the risk of injury in football is too high. So the only way you can do this is with positional players, and the only comp to this would be a guy like Travis Hunter. I think if he were to play corner and receiver for a National Football League team, the thing he would have to do is he'd have to be the number one receiver, right? He'd have to be the number one option. So he'd have to be a guy that would be, top five in receptions, in yards, and touchdowns as a wide receiver. But also on the other side, he would need to be a guy that's considered a shutdown corner. You can't do statistical with cornerbacks. A lot of times you can't really do statistical milestones to really prove how much of an impact the guy has because the better you are, the less they throw to you.
Right. The only thing statistically you can do with corners is look at what Darrell Revis did to every team's number one option, because he would always be guarding the number one option of who the Jets were playing that week.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to have Travis Hunter would be having to guarding the number one option of whoever the team that drafts him is facing.
Like, look at the corners, the top corners in the league. You think about a guy like Sauce Gardner, right? He's considered a guy who's either 1, 2, or 3, depending on how you rank him and Patrick Surtain and whatnot. You consider him a top corner in the league, a guy that's going to command a huge contract? I mean, you would assume he's creating a lot of takeaways, right? If you were to guess right now, through 2 years and 3 games with the New York Jets, considered an all-pro in both of his first 2 years, how many interceptions Sauce Gardner has, what would you say?
I would say probably has, because we're talking about this, 4.
Right. We have already kind of alluded that it's not going to be high.
4. How many interceptions?
Half of that.
Really?
Just Sauce Gardner has 2 interceptions.
Hmm.
So you can't the statistical milestone, like the number I would have to give you would be something that would be some nerdy analytical stat to prove just how dominant Travis Hunter would be as a corner in the league.
Yeah.
I think that the more important thing would be, is he a starting cornerback? Is he good enough to be starting outside corner for an NFL team, and I'm talking about not on just third downs when you know it's a passing situation. I'm talking about an every down starting corner. And is he like your ex receiver, a guy that you are on third downs again, like your Garrett Wilson? Is he your what Marvin Harrison is supposed to turn into? Is he your Justin Jefferson, your Jamar Chase? Like, he has to be your go-to guy on offense and a starting outside corner for you. If he can do that, I do think that we have to start putting him in that conversation because, I mean, that takes – think about the – also, you talk about how there's more stoppage in the NFL. I mean, not necessarily if you're playing both ways.
Right.
Because imagine your quarterback throws an interception. Quick change. Now you got to get back out there. Maybe you're just running a deep post if you're a Travis Hunter. Now you got to get right back out there and you got to line up as a shutdown outside corner and face a guy. And think about, you're playing the Texans. Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell. Like, there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide as a corner in today's NFL.
Yeah, also, if whatever Travis Hunter ends up being better at, which maybe at the end of this season we can definitively say he's more valuable on one side of the football or the other, as a corner or as a receiver.
Yeah.
If he gets hurt playing the lesser of the two, then you're almost saying immediately, okay, well, this experiment's over. We just lost our number one receiver and our cornerback.
Which one will be more valuable to you? And again, we're talking about what Travis Hunter would have to do in the NFL to comp to what Shohei Ohtani is in Major League Baseball, coming off of 6-for-6, coming off of entering the 50-50 club against your Miami Marlins, and also, literally, he's heading into what would be his third MVP and the first ever as a DH. What would Hunter have to do at the NFL level? And for your money then, C-Cat, as a guy that is a fan of the Baltimore Ravens, y'all don't necessarily have that kind of guy. Zay Flowers hasn't proven himself to be that. I don't know when the last time the Ravens have had a number one receiver. Maybe Anquan Boldin?
I was going to say, Anquan was up there. Torrey Smith flirted with that connotation for a little bit.
But y'all have had some corners. Which to you is more valuable? If you were to say he's a top five receiver, but also he could be a top five corner for you, which one would you rather him be playing full time if you had to give the other one up?
I would have to say it depends on if you have a good quarterback.
Yeah.
If you have a good quarterback, I would say it's more important at receiver, but it doesn't matter if he's a great receiver and your guy can't get him the football. So then
is that a shot at Daniel Jones? Is that a shot at Malik Nabers, Daniel Jones?
It's a shot at every single bad quarterback in the NFL. That's what I would say.
All of them look bad these days. Golly.
So that's what I would say. If you have a good quarterback, a starting quarterback, which if Travis Hunter might go number one, depending on how that draft shakes up, they probably don't have a good quarterback. So then I would find him to be more valuable at cornerback. Would he only be a number one overall pick if he is going to play both sides? Probably.
Yeah. I think so. Because of how inflated quarterbacks' value are right now, especially with the teams that are likely going to be picking top five, because you're looking at, well, actually, no. Think about if the Patriots. Because, you know, one thing about the Carolina Panthers, as incompetent and in the way of themselves as that franchise has been since Dave Tepper has taken over, I can see a world in which, as terrible as they are this year, they're going to play their way out of the number one overall pick. Everybody anticipates that they're going to be the number one team selecting in the 2025 NFL draft. I have a hunch, a feeling that they're going to win just enough games to be like second or third in the draft. And maybe the Patriots are the team that jump them and get the first pick. Who knows? Maybe the Giants. Maybe the Giants are. And they need a quarterback.
A lot of bad quarterback play these first two weeks of the NFL season, and a lot of it's been coming from good quarterbacks. So
that's crazy.
We're going to see the good quarterbacks maybe level out and find the mean, overperform in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, Travis Hunter, if he were to play both sides on my team, it depends if you have a good quarterback or not.
It absolutely depends if you have a good quarterback or not. And if he's playing both sides for you, at the very least, you know that you have a guy who's dedicated to the craft. Because the one problem I have with that for Travis Hunter is, brother, they paying you one contract. They ain't going to pay you for playing both ways.
Yeah.
They're not going to pay you for putting your body in harm's way on both sides of the ball and going all out. If you're going to do that, I would rather you do that in a gadget style maybe your first four seasons. And once you sign that major extension, then you start putting yourself more at risk and getting out there and showing what you can do. Have a long NFL career. Don't have a strong first 4 years and then they're going to – because, you know, the National Football League is just downright – like, they some savages.
Yeah.
Once your body wear out, they don't give a damn.
Injuries already, even before you wear down or are half a step slower, even before that, we're having guys drop like flies.
Imagine them franchising Travis Hunter Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the kind of situations he's going to get himself into trying to be a two-way player in a league that devalues its guys, especially players that are not quarterbacks, as much as the league does, they are going to take full advantage of that dude. And he's ready and willing to be taken advantage of, I guess. If you want to watch not just some Travis Hunter this weekend, but also just football in general, it's going to be so many different games. The NFL slate is tough this weekend. You're going to have your eyes all over the place. You're going to want to be at a place like Duffy Sports Grill. I mean, 80 or more televisions in every single location. And beyond that, it's the 2-for-1 drinks all day, every day. You don't got to wait on no happy hour, baby. I've never walked into a Duffy Sports Grill and looked at my watch. It doesn't matter. I don't have to walk into a Duffy's and say, I wonder what day it is. What specials? 2-for-1 drinks all day, every day, right? They have the new starters, the gridiron nachos, the house fried pickles. These are some starters that are made directly to improve your football viewing experience. You feel more like a football guy when you're chowing down on some gridiron nachos. Those are just the starters, award-winning burgers, jumbo wings. They got it all at the Duffy Sports Grill. Lock in, tap in, and become a Duffy's MVP just like me at duffysmvp.com. You can track your rewards, and they're going to keep on stacking as this season keeps on rolling. At Duffy's, our game is always on.
One more thing on Duffy's, by the way. They know how to change the channel when you ask it. I know it seems like a simple ask, but to be a sports bar and to have direct control of each individual TV, that's so important for the sports fans, especially down here where we're not in a market where, oh, we're in Chicago, everybody's watching the Bears game.
Yeah.
No, you're an individual. You have your own teams you root for. If you ask one of the awesome team members there at Duffy's to change the channel, they're going to do it for you, and it's not going to take a half hour. They're incredible.
They do it immediately. Funny enough, when we were going to that Duffy's in Delray, off of Linden and Federal.
Yes.
Come on now. For the Thursday night football kickoff, Chiefs-Ravens, there was a fan outside who was watching an outside TV. It was like on the general, generic, it was like a Duffy's menu on the TV or whatever. As he saw me walking in, I think he recognized me from, you know, theoretically speaking, or my former TV, where he's like, yo, Dio, yo, get him to change the channel for me. And I thought to myself, I'm like, I know he must have not asked anybody yet. So I'm like, you know, I said, bro, I got you, dog. You know, it's Duffy's, baby. Yeah. You're my people. I walk right inside. I see a host right there, and I'm like, hey, my guy out there, he would like to get that channel changed to the Chiefs-Ravens game. Can you hook it up? Before I even got back to where the other side, like less than 30 seconds till I got back to where you were to hook up our radio setup for that remote, I turn around. My dude is watching a little bit of that first quarter right there, seeing the action.
Exactly. Those are the intangibles of a sports bar, man.
And you got 80 or more televisions.
Exactly.
You know how many requests are coming in for you to fulfill it that quick? You got to love that kind of efficiency. Efficiency return to the New York Jets, but that's not the biggest takeaway from Thursday night football. The Jets won 24-3. C-Cat and I, we'll give you a quick dissect of that game because honestly, in a day where Shohei Ohtani was out there breaking records and breaking the backs of Marlins fans, really, I guess they were cheering for him more than not. It was kind of a blip on the radar. We'll talk about what we got out of that game, plus a little later, the safe bound get around that. C-Cat, Theo Dorsey, we're theoretically speaking on ESPN 106.3.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, Theo Dorsey is theoretically speaking. Streaming live on YouTube, here's Theo Dorsey.
Can't stress how much of a trooper my guy C-Cat is, man. I mean, literally, like, this time yesterday, I guess you were here. But then this time 2 days ago, you were in Italy.
I was in Italy,
man. Living a life.
Across the pond. It's the homeland.
Did they call that, like, across the pond, though? Isn't that more like... I feel like people don't use that vernacular for Italy. That's more so like England for some reason. I just
across the sea.
Across the sea, yeah. I don't know. Why specifically do people use across the pond generally only for like the UK?
That's a good question. I don't know. But yeah. It does sound English. You're right.
Yeah, like when you say across the pond, I thought about, yeah, we got to ask. 888-760-3776. This is pressing. I need y'all's help on this one. For my expert travelers, why is across the pond reserved specifically for UK travel? And then if you want to go, like, overseas or, you know, across... You say, what else do we use for, like, Italy?
I don't know.
Just out of the country.
Yeah.
But you was out there kicking it on the Amalfi Coast, which is dope. I love that for you. And you're back. You're hustling. Did you get enough sleep last night?
I fell asleep in the third quarter of yesterday's game. I'm happy I didn't miss anything that was too pressing.
Yeah.
And then I woke up at 5 a.m. because that was kind of still adjusting to the time change. But I fell back asleep, woke up at 8:30. I was good to go.
You know what you did miss? Like, the confusion that I had as to why is Aaron Rodgers still out there late in the third and early in the fourth on that specific turf, which we saw not only him lose his season to, but multiple players lose their season to, throwing the football, late down the street. It just feels irresponsible, CK.
They've got newer turf there to where it might not be a problem anymore.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
more of the ghost of the past, but it's their home field. So you can't be afraid of your home field.
I know.
You have to deny, even if there is a problem.
I'm just saying, like, you have the game wrapped up. I was surprised at the very least that they were still throwing the football, had Aaron Rodgers out there at 40 years old. Protect that man. I'm actually in the camp of, I know yesterday you accused me of trying to forecast injury on Aaron Rodgers. I'm in the camp of protect this man because I traded for him in your fantasy league. That's all. That's the only reason why.
I think Garrett Wilson owners were happy when he actually found the end zone.
Hell yeah.
If you look at the stat sheet, I mean, the Ugly. Patriots just schemed to take him out of the game.
Everybody's going to do that all year long. Aaron Rodgers talked about it. Do we have that sound? Aaron Rodgers talked. We don't have that sound, but Aaron Rodgers specifically afterwards talked about how they were playing a lot of cover two. He called it Mel Kiper's worst nightmare. Again, the sacrificial lamb, Mel Kiper from yesterday. On a slow-talking day, he gave up the whole, let's outlaw, let's ban too high safeties. Aaron Rodgers alluded to that, and he talked about how people are taking away his number one target.
Also, just I don't want to get sidelined on this, but that's just describing the shift in baseball. If you start outlawing position of defenders, that's what the changing to shift rule in baseball, which they did do that. It just seems so impossible to enforce.
It's not.
And it's weird.
Well, what Mel Kiper is trying to allude to enforcing, it's not even impossible to enforce because it's literally safety depth. The refs would just say, he's just saying you have to move up some.
And what if he says, okay, so just whoever the deepest of the deep is your safeties? Is that what you're saying? Because your corners could just play back, put your safeties up. And
yes.
Then you know?
You can't have multiple players deeper than, quote unquote, 20 yards, 25 yards, whatever you want to pick if you're Mel Kiper, if you're trying to outlaw too high.
Yeah. Just what this league needs, a more offensive-minded rule.
Yeah.
Which is being satirical because the only changes we've made to the NFL in the past 20 years has been to up scoring.
Hey, no. They did eradicate a bit of the tush-push stuff, right? I think they moved. You have to be at least a yard back of the quarterback if you're going to push now. That's the new addendum.
Oh, so you can get the momentum push before you hit it.
Yeah,
that helps.
I was curious with that. I wonder what the science behind that is because it sounds like you have an advantage now. Now it's like, get a little bit more of a running start.
It's like if you're going to punch somebody, now you have to step back 3 feet before you punch them. Oh, yeah. It's probably going to be a harder punch than if you were behind them 6 inches.
Yeah, just please stand flat-footed if you're going to punch me in the face. I don't want you to get a running start, a running haymaker at me. Even though if you did get a running haymaker at me and you hated me, if you're a person that hates Theo Dorsey and you saw somebody do a running haymaker, there are a lot of Theo Dorsey. There's more Theo Dorsey haters out there than I anticipated, and I learned that right after we started Theoretically Speaking in April. I'm like, where have y'all been?
You found out that you suck, Theo Dorsey.
I was like, wait, what the people don't like me.
No.
This is crazy. People don't like me, but you know what everybody likes? The coolest moment of the week.
Time now for the coolest moment of the week. Presented by EDS Air Conditioning and Plumbing. EDS is yes.
Shohei Ohtani. He not only joined the 50-50 club against the Marlins last night, not only helped the Dodgers clinch a playoff berth, he also, at the end of the game, when everything was wrapped up, on his sixth at-bat, he was already 5-for-5. He hit his third homer of the night at Lone Depot Park, and here's how it sounded.
God. Oh, my gosh! Shohei Ohtani! The greatest day in baseball history!
And that, my friends, is an overreaction. But it is the greatest day, at least of this week, and I will give that the EDS Air Conditioning and Plumbing coolest moment. Is that not an overreaction, CK? It's good. I appreciate it from the you got to do that if you're the announcer on the game.
Yes, and it's a home broadcast, so let's keep that in mind where it's not a national broadcast. This is the Dodgers, Joe Davis, talking about this broadcast.
Courtesy of Joe Davis on the Dodgers broadcast. Thank you.
Greatest day in baseball history because it was
crazy.
Checked all the bullet points that you can't really do elsewhere. I'm sure Shohei Ohtani would trade this day for, in Joe Davis's words, I guess a less great day, like a World Series championship. Come on. No, but I mean, individual performance that had both individual game ramifications and season-long accomplishments. It's the most uniquely great. How about that?
It's a very unique day. The greatest day in baseball. The greatest individual day in baseball history is an overreaction. I'll stand by that, but it was good enough for the coolest moment of the week, and that's courtesy of EDS Air Conditioning and Plumbing. Yeah, you know, I would take 2 for 5 with a home run and a stolen base. I would take that. That would be a good day for me, and that'd be cool enough. But you know what is perfectly cool in my house? 68, right around 68 degrees on the thermostat. And it's not because of me. I would prefer it a little warmer, but my wife likes it at that degree number. And it stays that way because we are locked in with EDS Air Conditioning and Plumbing. EDSisYes.com. EDSisYes.com. We talk about how consistent EDS Air Conditioning and Plumbing is. They're also trusted. They are your trusted AC experts in Palm Beach County with a 4.8 star Google rating with over 760 views. I mean, they've been keeping you cool since 2006. EDSisYes.com, 24/7 support, timely service, and best of all, you can book it online right around your time on your schedule. All right? They're always timely. They make sure to hit you up before they pull up, and your technician's going to give them a little summary. He's going to give a summary, he or she, about their expertise, about their fandom. Something for you to connect on. My guy Randy, he's a Canes fan. We're having a great year. And I'm having a great year as well because I'm locked in with the gold plan with EDS Air Conditioning and Plumbing. EDSisYes.com. EDSisYes.com for all your AC and plumbing needs. C-Cat, for Thursday Night Football, which again stands in the shadows of what happened last night for Shohei Ohtani, I do have to say this. There was only one result that would have came out of MetLife Stadium that would have mattered at all, that would have shook any kind of momentum for what we thought about both teams coming in and how we're going to project them going forward, and that was if the Patriots were somehow able to escape that game with a win. But I think 2 or 3 possessions into that game, it was clear the Jets were going to walk all over them. The question at that point was just, will Aaron Rodgers actually, you know, have a really good passing day? And you look at the numbers, and he did. 27 for 35, 281 yards, a couple of touchdowns, no picks because he's super conservative with the ball, and an 81 QBR.
Yeah, he hit the more than, right? He went more than for prize picks?
His passing
yards?
Yes, he did. He did because the number was at 215. And, you know, I put out there for it to go with less, and the reason being, number one, I thought the strength of this Jets team was the rushing game and some of the short passing attack. And also, I thought if there's one thing the Patriots weren't going to let them do with the as elite as that back end was to throw the ball all over the field on them. But Rodgers found his way. It wasn't like it was a bunch of deep shots. The deep shots he didn't really connect on, he found his way on that defense, and he obliterated that number. Maybe he looked like a fool.
And the run game looked good, too. Aaron Rodgers had complete a stranglehold on that game. Whenever he touched the football, he was determining what was going to happen.
Yeah.
It almost felt predetermined with how great he played. I think that if Aaron Rodgers did put up a 350 yards, 4 touchdowns, I think that would matter.
That would have, you know what? That would have moved the needle a lot more. Because it's still as good of a passing day as it was. It was efficient. The numbers were good. The offense looked in sync. It wasn't electric, right?
No.
It wasn't like something that was like, oh my, like we're not watching back Aaron Rodgers' highlights aside from that Garrett Wilson touchdown throw, which. Yeah.
That was a nice play, but yeah. I also think that it was cool to see Aaron Rodgers never lost his touch. Like, Aaron Rodgers is who we thought he was.
He looked good.
And it also came in that Jets uniform where we haven't seen good quarterback play. And not to belabor on that point, but I feel good for Jets fans because just like the first drive of the first game of the season for the Jets, where it was so well managed, the offense was firing on all cylinders. Yes, the Jets eventually lost that game by 2 possessions or more, but the offense looked strong.
Yeah.
And we saw that again in a win for the Jets in another primetime game.
You know what the real problem is here? Braylon Allen. Braylon Allen is a problem. The rookie out of Wisconsin. Shout out ESPN Madison. I should have asked them, our family, our friends up there, about how much of a dog this dude is. They got Braylon Allen, the running back, the backup for Breece Hall in the 4th round. 11 carries, 55 yards. He also got involved in the pass game, 3 receptions, 13 yards. He looks like he's like tit for tat. Like him and Breece Hall are going to be like a good 1-2, like a 1A, 1B versus it being Breece Hall's backfield. And I say that, you know, not to scare any fantasy managers off, but more so as a credit to the Jets, because if you're going to have an offensive line with those tackles who are a little older, a little shaky, right? If you're going to have an Aaron Rodgers who's less mobile, you know what helps that a lot? Is two dudes you can check down to, two running backs that can threaten the defense and make them push back some, along with that Garrett Wilson on the outside. Like, I think the Jets' offense is going to be better than we anticipated, for sure.
I think we also learned last night that the Patriots weren't fooling anybody with the first 2 weeks of the season.
No.
Bringing the Seahawks to overtime, beating the Bengals. This is kind of the Patriots we anticipated to see without Drake May at quarterback, with Jacoby Brissett in there, still trying to find their way. Okay, we weren't all completely wrong on the Patriots in 2024.
No. You know what we were, though? We need to put more of a spotlight on the Cincinnati Bengals. My biggest takeaway from Thursday Night Football, it isn't that the Jets found their groove. Go Stella. You did your thing. It wasn't about Aaron Rodgers' awkward interaction with Robert Saleh on the sideline there, where Saleh goes for the hug and Rodgers shoves him off. And we'll get to that, Rodgers' explanation, which to me still leaves me with more questions than answers. To me, it's that the Cincinnati Bengals are the one team in the league right now going into this weekend where it's seriously a must-win against those Washington Commanders on Monday night. That's going to be a primetime game for the Bengals, a game that is up against a rookie quarterback in just his third year that you already have your corner, Cam Taylor-Britt, calling him out for playing a simple offensive scheme with Cliff Kingsbury. If the Bengals don't walk out of there with a win and they start 0-3, I think it's time to call it. They're not going to make the playoffs, and they're going to be a unmitigated disaster and a failure based on expectations coming into this year. Joe Burrow looked good against the Chiefs. The defense played up to the Chiefs' level. If they play down to the Commanders on Monday night, dog, like that, what the Jets did to the Patriots today eliminates any kind of excuses the Bengals would have from losing another game, because the Patriots game, because of how competitive they were the week after against the Seahawks, you could have said, man, it's just a feisty New England team that mucked it up.
Yeah.
They have no excuses anymore.
Yeah, the Bengals start 0-3. The only pause I have to that is the rest of the division, minus the Steelers, kind of is storming out of the gates, kind of stumbling. I mean, the Ravens are 0-2 as well. So that's who I have winning that division.
Who would you have? Let's just say, in a hypothetical world, the Bengals and the Ravens lose in week three here. They both start 0-3. Who would you have more confidence in coming back from that 0-3 deficit?
Probably the Ravens.
I would say easily the Ravens. Easily the Ravens.
Yeah, and because we're talking about regular season success and not postseason success.
Yeah.
So I would say Baltimore would bounce back with that, with a more experienced head coach.
Yeah.
With more of an identity right now, because it's not just maybe that one flash in the pan performance that got them to the Super Bowl, one game away from raising the Lombardi.
Yeah.
The Ravens have been there and done that in the regular season. So yeah, I think raising the sounding the alarm louder after an 0-3 start, hypothetically, would be the Bengals.
And the Bengals would have losses to both the Patriots and the Commanders, two teams that we have zero expectations for. At least with the Ravens, you just have that one blip on the radar. You have that one loss against the Raiders, which you were up by 10 in the fourth quarter, and somehow you fumbled that lead away. Your other two losses are to teams that we came in saying they can win the Super Bowl this year if everything goes right. Kansas City Chiefs, and then what this weekend would be in the Dallas Cowboys. Though I do say, I don't see Lamar Jackson losing three straight games. I don't see John Harbaugh letting it happen either. I think, again, that's why we made it our lock for punchline picks. The Ravens are walking out of there with a win. And I wouldn't be surprised if it happened demonstratively, because I think they'll pound the rock and really put that Cowboys defense on their heels.
I think I'm getting more and more confident in that game.
Yeah.
I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan.
There we go.
I'm also a critic of Lamar Jackson, so I see both sides. I am extremely confident in the Baltimore Ravens to win this game. They're what, a point favorites on the road in Dallas? Ravens are going to win this game, no doubt about it. Put all your money on it. Yeah.
Put all your money on it.
Exactly. Put the house, put the car, put the kids' college funds. Ravens are going to win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hey, if you're taking financial advice from CCAT and doing it anyways, you deserve whatever the hell happens.
Mm-hmm.
You deserve whatever the hell happens on that. But take it from a Ravens fan that is a cynic. I love that Baltimore pick. I'm glad you agree with me on making them a lock.
We
had a little bit of contention yesterday, but you're back.
Yeah, that's the only pick I actually like of yours on our punchline picks that you can find on social media.
Yes.
The pick competition between, theoretically speaking, and the show that follows ours, Russo and Rizzo, where at the end of the season, we count up the numbers. Whoever had the worst record between the two sides has to do stand-up comedy.
That's right. Or in your case, CCAT gets to because you kind of want to lose and get on the mic anyways.
I get discovered, and then you need to find a new producer because I'm touring in the country.
You will at least finish out the football season. Damn.
We'll see.
I do have to say this before we dip on out of here and get to the other side and hit that safe bound get around. I want y'all to pull up on me, man. This is going to be a fun time. It's going to be a real party. You know what? For the people that are fans of Theoretically Speaking and myself and CCAT, and even the Theo Dorsey haters out there that have reared their ugly heads ever since we brought out this this show, Theoretically Speaking, pull up on us and have a good time at the annual Boca Raton Bowls ABC Supply Great Chef's Tailgate. It's a showcase presented by Boca Raton Innovation Campus and CP Group, and it's going to be Tuesday, October 15th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Again, that's Tuesday, October 15th, 6 to 8:30 p.m. Join myself and the fam at Brick in Boca Raton as dozens of local chefs, breweries, and cocktail masters are going to serve up their favorite tailgate classics. Tickets are on sale right now. That includes all food samplings, entertainment, beer, wine, cocktails, soft drinks, all of it. Everything you need. Visit spiritofgivingnetwork.org/events. You can purchase your tickets today, and you can either heckle me on the mic or you can celebrate and toast me with some of those delectable cocktails. And CCAT, it'll be your first time at the Great Chef's Tailgate.
Yeah, I won't have to work it from back of the station. And Theo told me before we got on the air today about the Chef's Tailgate. If you say the secret word, you get a kiss from Theo Dorsey. You just got to say the secret word and he will kiss you.
Wow.
Yeah, he just kiss you on the lips.
You weren't supposed to tell anybody. I only told you that, CCAT.
The secret word, though. I didn't say what the word was.
Yeah, goodness. We're Theoretically Speaking on ESPN 106.3.
Live from the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, Theo Dorsey is Theoretically Speaking. Streaming live on YouTube, here's Theo Dorsey.
Hey, man, I'm starting to feel like maybe I'm catching the Travis Hunter Shohei Ohtani bug right now, man. I'm feeling like I'm doing a little bit of both. Because, CCAT, I got trivia for you today.
Oh,
I got
really?
Some Theoretically Speaking trivia for you today.
Wow.
It's going to be a little baseball action.
Okay.
So we'll
it's
hold
off the
that.
Dome, too. You didn't look it up.
Nah, just right off the dome. I have so much. I mean, look at this. This is this rock of knowledge I got here on top of my shoulders. So much baseball history, stats, and notes. It's not like I spent this morning like reading up on who the hell Shohei Ohtani was.
Not
That's
at all.
That's not what happened.
No, you did not have a 45-minute conversation with Colin Russo right outside my door while I was trying to work. That didn't happen.
No, absolutely not. By the way, Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah?
He's 30 years old. Learned that today. We're going to hit the safe bound. that wasn't compelling. I know. You didn't even know what to say to that.
Yeah, I kind of.
I thought he was younger, though. I honestly thought he was younger.
I thought of the sound I was going to make before you actually said it.
Yeah.
You ever have a predetermined answer because you think you know what's going to come?
And you
I thought you were going to say something interesting, so I sounded interested.
Right. And then you realize I just said his age.
Yes.
And, I mean, honestly, though, that did shock me a little bit. It did shock me a little bit. I thought he was like 28, 27. I mean,
Shohei
not that crazy. Yeah.
Plays for the Dodgers.
Hey, Deshaun Foster said, UCLA, we're in LA. Also, so is USC.
Mm-hmm.
These are the facts. If he could do that, and he's a Big Ten football coach, I can do that as a sports talk radio host. You know what else I can do? I can strap up the seatbelt. I can ready my voyage. Ready my voyage wheels and hop on the safe bound. Get around.
I get around. What you mean you don't know?
Round and round.
Check
and
go.
Round.
I get around.
Now, before we hit the first stop on this thing, I do have to say I see some quick breaking news from Adam Schefter.
Oh,
Justin
no.
Herbert. He told reporters that he suffered a high ankle sprain on Sunday versus Carolina, so we'll see if he is going to be available. He's questionable against Pittsburgh this weekend. That's a little scary for the Chargers.
Yeah, it is.
Good for Justin Fields.
If you take away Justin Herbert, what do the Chargers have?
Easton Stick.
Got Jim Harbaugh.
He would probably have to get out there and start throwing the ball because I do not want to see another Easton Stick game.
Next stop.
Speaking of, let's go to L.A. California Chargers head coach Jim Harbaugh is being considered for a Pulitzer Prize based on his answer about how offensive coordinator Greg Roman improves that run game. Take a listen to this.
He's just a great coach. I mean, one of the best I've ever been around. You know, like Moses, I'm gonna die leaning on my staff.
Oh my God.
I
No one laughed, though.
Dog.
No one got it.
I think the problem is he's in L.A. There's not a lot of spiritual people in L.A. Not like, a lot of people that kind of get the Bible reference there.
Did Moses die on his staff?
He didn't necessarily die on his staff, but he always had the staff with him. He kept that rod on him. You know what I'm saying?
All right.
The rod of God.
So rate that 1 out of 10.
That's a 12.
Okay.
That's a bar, because think about what he's saying there. People took it too literally when they thought that Moses, like, died on his staff. But Moses kept that thing with him. And what Harbaugh is saying, he going to lean on his staff. He's going to die on that. He's going to lean on his staff so hard, just like Moses did. He used that staff for the many miracles that God led him to. He parted the Red Sea with that staff.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? He got some water out of a rock with that staff. Moses did some magic with it.
Wasn't familiar with your game, Jim Harbaugh. Way to go.
That's a deep cut. And also, that's an original. So for Harbaugh spitting out that OG, that original right there, I'm kind of starting to like Harbaugh and the Chargers.
Oh, no. You can't say that.
I'm kind of starting to like Harbaugh. That was a bar.
Next stop.
Going to Boston, Massachusetts. Because if you remember, we talked about it on the show. Schefter broke the news about how he announced Woj's retirement, how Woj announced his retirement. Yeah. And it sounded like Adrian Wojnarowski fought in Korea or something. And I kind of followed the same sentiment. Or if you saw it on ESPN, because in the same business as Adam Schefter, a news-breaking journalist, Bill Simmons had something to say about how the Wojnarowski retirement was treated by Adam Schefter. And you really got to listen.
You can't overreact after Adrian Wojnarowski retires either, like Adam Schefter did. He wanted his life back. He didn't want to have to work on holidays. He didn't want to have to be away from more family gatherings.
I will say this.
He didn't want to take a shower with your phone up against the shower door so you could see a text that's coming in. Or take your phone with you to the urinal and hold it in one hand while you take care of your business in the other. That's the life we live. This is the thing Adam Schefter said on television. What is Adrian Wojnarowski? Was he an ER doctor during COVID? I wasn't sure.
Yeah, we got to stop glamorizing Woj. I mean, he actually does more harm than good for the league. He announced draft picks 10 seconds before they get announced.
Yeah.
He announces trades before the team announced them. What good does that do anybody?
Well, you know, it's funny. He was moving his weight around at ESPN in a hefty way. And his presence leaving ESPN is a big deal. I did find it weird, though, that we did. Like, to me, it was kind of I love the Woj bombs, though. It was special to me, but we did take it a little far there. Like, yeah. I don't even throw out usually, not RIP, but, you know, happy retirement posts for people. I did that with Woj.
Yeah, just kind of...
Kind of lame of me, huh?
Showing your rear end.
Am I corny for that?
You're so corny.
I had a selfie with Woj at Madison Square Garden.
The media is such... I'm scratching your back till you scratch mine.
He's not going to ever do anything for me, though.
The reason Adam Schefter put on this just really funeral service for Woj and was brought to tears about this is because he wants people to do the same for him when he retires.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That, and also if anybody understands the plight or any kind of woes that Woj might go through, it is Adam Schefter, right? So
lame.
He might have been giving... I'm not saying it's warranted. I'm just saying he might be giving his own, like... His own tales. He's feeling the same thing. He's like, damn, he's free. I'm not.
Next stop.
Our last stop brings us to Philadelphia because the Sixers and star center Joel Embiid agreed to a max extension deal worth $193 million. He signed through the 2029 season and will make $69 million in his age 34 season.
I found the perfect NFL comp for Joel Embiid. Some people were trying to give him the Lamar Jackson. I think that's disrespectful to Lamar.
Yeah.
I go Dak Prescott. I go Dak Prescott. It's a deal that you have to do, right? You're locking this guy in for the long-term future because what the hell else are you going to do if you're the Sixers? There's no guarantee that Embiid delivers a championship. He also, as great as he's been in the regular season, as high of a watermark he'll give you and the high of a floor he'll give you as a team in the regular season, he hasn't produced majorly in the playoffs. He's never been to a semifinal. Right? Or excuse me, he's never been to a conference final. And he also, you know, his first taste of winning was when he had to join Team USA. And he literally was one of the worst performing bigs at moments for that team.
Ooh, are we going to see
over the summer?
Dak Prescott flag football? Is that what's going to happen?
Dak Prescott flag football 2028 in LA. Book it. Book it. That'll be the championship that Dak Prescott wins. And, you know, if you're a a fan of Big D, if you're a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, you'll have to live with it. One thing that you don't have to live is moving yourself. Like, if we were to do midday midterms and grade, trying to move yourself out of an apartment, out of a home, C-Cat, I mean, that's an F minus.
Just disgusting.
Don't do it.
That's an early drop in college. Like, ooh, you wouldn't even get a grade.
Don't even get there.
No.
Exactly. And when you do drop that class, guess what? Safebound Moving and Storage right there. Right there at your counselor's office to be that thing that makes it up for you. They're family-owned. They're based in West Palm Beach, and they serve all of Florida. Safebound Moving and Storage is Florida's moving company. So whether you're moving out of the state of Florida, from county to county within, or maybe you're one of those folks that listen nationwide to Theoretically Speaking, and you want to come in and stay in the Sunshine State, Safebound Moving and Storage is the company to go with. They are the pros. They have a super-duper high rating, and it's because they have great customer service. Pristine. They take care of you so you don't have to carry that load, carry that burden yourself. Safebound Moving and Storage, you are safe with Safebound. That was a get around. Time for the happy hour. Tina's pulling up on the other side. We're going to toast. We're going to have some fun, and we're going to share some stories. We got to get back to Shohei Ohtani's dominance at Lone Depot Park. That's C-Cat. I'm Theo Dorsey. We're Theoretically Speaking on ESPN 106.3.